Good evening.
It's morning.
I'm Dwight East, no matter what time it is. And welcome to the Firesign Theater Playhouse of the Airs. This evening, the first part of a six-part miniseries of high-charged political drama, The Jimmy Carter Story. The scene, the Plains Agricultural Extension. Professor John Carter leans over a test tube.
Well, so was it, Dixon. A little more amino acid for vitality.
Hello, what's this? This solution's turning blue. Not quite the solution I expected. That means the rat should have lived and the captain should have died, of course. Let's see. Norveticus ratus, Norveticus asses mammalia, Rodentia meridae. Here we are, that's black and brown. Eats electricity.
Jones, the rats have gotten to everything but this half tin of Uncle Sigmund's Peruvian cocoa powder.
That'll be all right. Did you know, Flotsam, that if rats were the size of English children, they could wipe us out in a week?
Shocking! Oh, I don't want to hear about it. Here's your cocoa.
Oh, thank you,
Milk, sugar?
No, I'll take it straight.
I'll just have some tea if you don't mind.
A touch of lanolin for nice, healthy skin, and a dose of iron salts for a good, tough shell. I am creating the perfect Georgia peanut. Turn up the heat any minute now. Oh! Good goober, what have I done?
Hello, Dad.
I've created a monster, not a peanut.
I'm both, Dad. I'm Jimmy.
Oh, hi,
Jimmy. And I can't wait to get to school and start my slow, mysterious rise to the presidency.
What the hell does that mean? What am I going to tell your mother? Will she believe that a son was born to us in a test tube?
Tell it's a miracle. She believes in miracles.
Is Professor Zygote still in his secret laboratory?
Yes, he shut himself in there for 5 days working on his new biochemical discovery.
Hasn't he eaten?
No, I tried to slip trays of food under the door, but they don't fit.
There's only one thing that will fit, a package of Carnation Instant Breakfast.
You're right, let's try it.
Professor, we've brought you some breakfast.
How many times do I have to tell you? I don't want any greasy bacon, cold eggs, and soggy toast all squashed under my door.
But Professor, this is different. Just listen to what's in it. Sucrose, sodium silico-aluminate, sodium ascorbate, ferric orthophosphate, riboflavin, pyridoxine, hydrochloride.
I never realized how hungry I was.
Give it to me.
Wait, Professor, you have to mix it with milk.
What's that? Supersaturated homogenized calcium lactose.
Why didn't you say so?
Carnation Instant Breakfast. Lots of delicious flavors. Just mix a package with supersaturated homogenized calcium lactose.
What's that?
Start off your day.
Now get me out of this test tube and into a little sailor suit. And Father?
Yes, son?
A few years from now, you and Mom are going to be thinking about having another son, a Billy.
Yes, I suppose that's possible.
Do me a favor, Dad.
Huh?
Forget it.
We'll be right back to Act Two of the Jimmy Earl Carter story after this.
Hello, this is Jimmy Carter, President of your United States. And did you know that recently I had the honor to fly in Chopper 1 over Mount St. Helens. And I spoke to the geologist next to me and said, isn't this the greatest disaster in the recorded history of North America? And he said, Mr. President, that's debatable. And I said, I never debate. And so I went back to my private thoughts. And then he said to me, Mr. President, do you realize that Mount St. Helens is dumping enough ash to equal 1 ton of residue for every living being on the planet? Well, that made me think. And when we landed back at the Spokane airport, I said, haul some of this ash back to the White House. And when I returned to the White House, I sat and I thought and I thought. And I thought, Mount St. Helens, another great disaster that's been bubbling up for centuries, totally ignored by previous administrations, much like the other problems that I have faced in my administration. I had 200 million tons of ash brought back to the White House, spread a little on the Rose Garden, gave a little to Hamilton Jordan. He carries it around in a tiny vial with a tiny spoon and shows it to all of his secretaries and administrative assistants. But I thought, I've got an idea. So now, while the polls are still against me, I'm making a special presidential offer. If you will dedicate your vote vocally to Jimmy Carter now, before the Republican convention, I will personally send you your weight in ash. That's right. Vote for Jimmy Carter, and I personally will make an ash of you. Thank you very much.
Hi, Bert. What'll it be?
How about a loan?
What about collateral?
How about a beer?
Sure. What's the brand?
Burt Lance Overdraft. Here, have another.
Thanks.
Hey, now, how about that loan?
Sure.
Burt Lance Overdraft. You can bank on it. Now back to the Jimmy Earl Carter story.
Oh, what bright child we have, dear. Only a day old, and already he's learned to use the flap on his sailor suit.
Yes, Mother dear. I have no time for childhood games. I must sacrifice the simple joys of playing softball and going potty for a greater destiny. One day, I shall be president.
That's admirable, my little test tube tot. You wish to be as great a man as Calvin Coolidge?
Even greater. Now I'm off to Annapolis.
Goodbye, son.
But, Jimmy, you've only just been toilet trained.
That's all a lad needs to succeed at the academy, Mother. Button me up and wish me luck.
Oh, you've got it, son.
So long.
Bye-bye. I don't know, Lillian. Maybe I should have never let him out of the tube. He's spooky.
Oh, it's too late now, honey. He belongs to history.
Listen next time to part two of the Jimmy Earl Carter story, Navy Days, on the Firesign Theater of the Airs.
When I started my first year at Yale, that September 1921, I never dreamed I'd ever become an icon. All I did was decide to scull down to Breakneck, Long Island, for a Thanksgiving dinner at the laboratory mansion of my eccentric uncle, Professor Emmanuel Archetype.
Ah, there you are. Welcome, Frankie. Pour yourself a cocktail. Sit down first. Oh, stand up.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Thanks, Uncle
Pour
Professor.
Pour yourself a cocktail.
All right. Yeah. These martinis look great.
Oh, not that one, boy. That'll make you live forever.
Wow! I wouldn't want to do that for a long time.
Oh, sure.
Shaken and stirred, he sat me down in front of what looked like an aquarium. Where are all the fish, sir?
Belly up in the net.
What?
That's the catch, Frank. Shovel some coal into that boiler over there.
Oh, okay, sir.
Come on, put your back into it. That's it. Good boy. No, I want some more. 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 Come on, keep it going. Come on. Catch it now. Here comes. Welcome to the steam-driven internet, Frank.
Wow!
Yes, sir. You see, boy, I have invented a device whereby all the people in the world can communicate at the speed of light.
You mean radio?
No, radio's a heartbreak. Radio's a glass of warm lemonade compared to this. Would you like a glass of warm lemonade, boy?
I'd rather have another of these cold martinis.
No, oh, whoa. Frank, not that one. That's the cure for polio. Sit down and keep your eyes on that aquarium.
It's very bracing.
Frank.
Thank you.
Yes.
What do you mean, eyes? Have you invented television?
Television? Yeah, it's an addiction whose time is yet to come, Frank. Guess again.
Gee, it's not radio or television. Can I have sex with it?
Well, virtually. You know, you can do virtually anything on the internet. Steam-driven it is, young man.
But you can't eat it. What if I want a snack?
Ah, you come to the right place. You want a snack? Just watch this. Here we go.
What are you doing?
I'm mailing a message to the cook.
Well,
here.
Can't you just ring the bell?
Oh, this is better than bells, Frank. It's bells and whistles. Come on. Just type in COOK at kitchen.home. Look, there's the menu, you see?
Wow.
Canapes.
Canapes.
Anchovies.
Ooh.
Heated, 12-point, two dozen. And now, enter. There it is.
Your snack, sir.
Wow!
Anchovies faster than the speed of light.
Oh, this is better than television and radio put together.
Radio is television put together, Frank.
Now, here's today's unanswerable question. Isn't it true that Ronald Reagan is merely a stand-in for John Wayne? Wasn't he always? To answer this question, send a postcard to Lucky Lymph Nodes, Box 0, El Rancho, California. And now the Campaign Chronicles 2-Minute Theater of the Air is somewhat chagrined to present part one of the Ronald Reagan story.
Excuse me. How many parts are there going to be?
Yeah, how many parts?
I don't quite know yet. 6 parts, maybe?
Six. It's a 6-part series. Wait a minute. You mean we're going to spend over 10 minutes on the Ronald Reagan story?
Oh, Phil, see? I mean, there, right there, you millions of Americans from every country in the world don't even know how to pronounce his name, let alone how he could ever have gotten nominated. It's Reagan.
Like a Reagan, just, like Buck Rogers?
Yeah,
like those
just help me out here. We'll continue now. Here it goes.
The Ronald Reagan Story.
We begin in a simpler time and a simpler place. Tampico, Illinois, on the 6th of February, 1911.
Ronald Reagan, an Aquarian. The native was born the same day, although of course not the same year, as Aaron Burr, the crafty and ambitious killer of Alexander Hamilton, and as Babe Ruth, the Sultan of SWAT, who, though long since gone to the old batter's box in the sky, was born only 16 years before Reagan.
According to our research, the governor shares his birthday with such showbiz notables as Zsa Zsa Gabor, Mamie Van Doren, Rip Torn, and Fabian.
And Eva Braun.
Jawohl, und Eva Braun?
Ronnie's father was an Irishman who loved shoes.
I love my father, begorra. I love them shoes.
Give me shoes back.
Shoes for industry.
Shoes for the dead.
Yeah. Shoes for industry.
Hi, I'm Joe Beats. Hey, what chance does a returning deceased war veteran have for that good-paying job, more sugar, and the free mule you've been dreaming of? Well, think it over. Then take off your shoes. Now you can see how increased spending opportunities means harder work for everyone. And more of it, too. So do your part today, Joe. Join with millions of your neighbors and turn in your shoes.
For industry.
Dad was something of a drunk, but he told a great dirty joke, which is something Ronnie still likes today.
There were these two dogs making
Ronnie's mother was not Irish, nor was she Dutch, which was and is Ronnie's nickname. If you don't mind, we'll call him that from now on.
I'll do it. Dutch's mother gave impassioned dramatic readings for local charitable gatherings.
As for Dutch himself, as he grew up in and around Chicago, he developed an early passion for stuffed animals.
Stuffed animals?
Yeah, real animals, you know, stuffed.
Oh.
But just in time, he was, as he says,
I was drawn by the lure of sweat and action.
Thanks, Phil. Dutch. Yes, lured by sweat and action to the game of football. Yes, football. Even though he was small for his size and couldn't see his foot in front of his face, Dutch made the team.
Rah, 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 Dixon High! Go, Dutch! Go, Dutch! Go, Dutch! Go, Dutch!
But Dutch Reagan was a double threat man then as now. And in our next episode of the Ronald Reagan Story, we'll find out just what I mean.
I'd like to know, because
I'm so glad that's over.
Oh, boy.
And now, another in our series, Poll the People, where Campaign Chronicle talks to you, the real ones, to find out what you really have to say about the choices offered you for the presidency.
And today, we're talking with Alabama trucker Harlan Drain, known to his CB buddies as Big Rubber Bumper. And here's that tape. Let's begin, Harlan, by asking you about President Carter. He's a good old boy. I think I got that right. And what do you think of him and his chances for staying in office?
Say, are you recording this for the Radidio? Because I'm a cradle baby in the padiddle where the real stuff's concerned.
Well, we just want your honest opinions, you understand? That's all.
Pepsi Day. Uh-huh. I'll just try to keep the shiny side up and the dirty side down is all.
Uh-huh.
Now, that Carter, he's kind of a pushmobile. And if he don't put the pedal to the metal, hang his toenails on the radiator, and let the motor toter, he ain't gonna put himself up there.
Oh, I saw this on 60 Minutes.
Uh-huh. He's an old gunny beggar. I got nothing but happy numbers for him, but he's in Georgia overdrive right now, and he's all awaiting the eyeball if he's a gearbonger, a Genghis Khan, or a swamper, 40D.
Mm-hmm.
He's already got his feet in the carburetor, and he might be a floater, because he's been a button pusher on a glory roll for maybe too long. Look at him. Trim man.
Yeah.
Dressed for the ball in the back seat.
Uh-huh.
If he plans to stay home 20 in Watergate Town, he better keep in front of the Dragon Wagon copy and commence to jackdaw wall-to-wall from the front door. And I'm on standby. Am I getting out?
Well, I'd like to get out now, but could we ask you what you think about Kennedy?
Oh, well, sir. That Kennedy, Done pulled a Willie Weaver when he bellied up off in that haircut palace with that panty stretcher. And his XYO weren't ecstatic or it neither. It was panic in the sheets, guarantoyo. But he's an old road jockey, and any rubbernecker will tell you when you can roll on a pumpkin like that without putting on air, you got a rascal in the rat race.
Pumpkin rolling. Well, pumpkin. This is fascinating, I think. Uh-huh. Do you feel up to answering some more?
Bodacious. Take me for a trip around the horn.
Oh, well, maybe we could do that later.
Maybe later. There's a girl down at the motel.
Okay, first.
Uh-huh. Maybe you could tell us what you think of Anderson.
Mercy. Mm-hmm. There's a junk buzzard in midnight overdrive.
Yeah.
And it ain't no milk run through the land of wonderful. He don't want to join the jamboree, and that means a trip over loose boards all the way. But
I like this.
He could knock the slack out in a short and pull off on left shoulder. Still, the demons call him a hoo-hooer, honey on the road. And what this country needs is a one-time okey blower, a real hood lifter, not a hot load or a chicken choker.
Well, are you a hoo-hooer? I mean, could I hoo-hoo? Who are you going to vote for is what I'm trying to say.
Ronnie!
Oh!
That's my good buddy.
Uh-huh.
He'll tell the commies and the also Irans to 10-400, and I'll go 10-102. That's 10 pounds, boy. Mm. No threes and eights.
None?
Yes, sir. With him on skates and the big slab, we'll all be smoking dope.
We can't say
he's a pusher. Reagan. Professional hard ankle from Tinsel City.
Reagan?
We need a truck stop commando like him who'll make it roll and won't jack it around.
Oh, he doesn't do
it's
that.
The only way the losers will be winners again.
Well, don't you think his age will affect his ability to perform?
Mercy sakes, hang it in your car. Don't need a hemorrhoid with a Polaroid to dig that. But slip him a cup of 100-mile black water, some cockle burrs and cookies, and he's back in the easy chair, clear and rolling clean. He ain't ready for the bone box yet, negatory. Breeze it.
Well, thank you for your interesting comments, Mr. Bumper.
Ungawa buana.
Uh-huh. Hmm?
We down, we quit, we clear, we gone. We bye-bye.
Ronald Reagan recently announced that if he is elected president, he will take a senility test right after taking the oath of office. It may sound something like this.
Excuse me, just sit down here, will you, Mr. President?
Well, it's a great pleasure to sit down. Sitting down is something that I can do even at my age.
Now, yes, I understand that. May I take your pulse here? Just put this in your mouth,
please.
Your temperature.
My temperature.
Seems all right. Seems all right. Your pulse is even. All right, we now begin the mental status exam. Would you just hold on to this can here? It's connected to an electrode, which is...
Oh, it gives me a nice tingle. I haven't felt that since I was on
all right,
football
now,
field.
Now, here we go. Here's the first question of your mental status. Are you listening now?
What?
All right. Where are you?
I'm at the top of my profession.
Oh, that's a very good answer. You got that, nurse? All right. Mm-hmm. All right, now tell me, what time of day is it?
It's time for Reagan.
Uh-huh. That's very good. Would you make a note of that, please?
I always know what time it is.
Now, let me see. Now, what did you have for breakfast?
Oh, I had one of those long yellow things you have to peel that looks like Bob Hope's nose, you know, that monkeys eat. Banana.
Banana.
I had a banana.
Banana. Will you write down that? I think we should take that off his diet. All right. Now, will you please count backwards from 100... by sevens, please.
Oh, that's unfair. This is a trick. I know this is a trick. You must be a commie.
This is very easy
this is
to
a
do.
Trap. This is a trap. A president doesn't.
Mr. President,
I'm never
going
to have to count by sevens.
Nurse.
I've got people that can do that
someone
for
me. Come in
I've got,
and hold
I've got
down,
a whole
please.
Cabinet. They can count one at a time.
We need some help.
By sevens, 100. How about doing if it's bottles of beer on the wall? I used to know that one in college.
Now, here's today's unanswerable question. Wasn't it about President Jimmy Carter they said, first in war, first in peace, but second in the hearts of his countrymen? To answer this question, phone 800-PENNSYLVANIA-65000. Collect day or night. Nurses will be standing by.
And now, the Campaign Chronicles 2-Minute Theater of the Air is nonplussed to present Part 2 of the Ronald Reagan story, Part 2.
Thank you, Phil. As you probably missed in our last episode, Dutch Reagan, the future governor of California and frequent presidential candidate, was growing up in Dixon, Illinois.
Did you say Nixon, Illinois?
No. Dixon. He played on the Dixon High football
team.
Those
were the days.
Whoop, whoop. Put two, take it, Dutch.
Later. He was to say of football...
Football was a matter of life and death.
Well, to make a long story short...
I certainly wish you would, Dave.
Yeah.
Dutch graduated from high school and followed his girlfriend to the little Christian college of Eureka near Peoria.
Can I tell you all, every student here at Eureka,
you know, it's not so good ourselves.
That if we just stick together, we can defeat this president. Let's go on strike.
Hey, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Ronald Reagan went on strike to protest the president?
Yes.
What president?
The president of the college, Peter. I did pretty much the same thing myself once, didn't you?
Did they win? And did they defeat him?
Oh, sure. Ron was a big hero. You know, he was also a big hero on the football field and on stage.
I guess I just liked showing off.
Well, you still do, Governor. But you know what makes you more confusing is your split personality. Mm. You find that being a hero is so much fun that you can't decide between...
the field!
The stage! The stage!
The field! Yay!
Well, you know, it's all show business. And isn't that what you wanted, Ron? Dutch?
Dutch.
A career in show business?
A career in show business, huh, Reagan?
Yes, sir.
And you want to start as a radio announcer in the city of Chicago?
Yes, sir. That's all we ever listen to at home.
Well, I'm sorry there, Regan, but we don't hire men with no experience.
What?
I advise you to try the Sticks. That is, one of the smaller stations.
Oh, gosh.
Does Ron Regan find success in his chosen career of radio just like the Firesign Theater?
Well, tune in again next time for the Ronald Reagan Story.
Well, welcome to the Firesign Theater of the Air. I'm your host, Dwight Eats, Dwight Yeast. And tonight, part two of the six-part miniseries of high-paced political history, the Jimmy Earl Carter story. Tonight, Navy Days. The scene, a classroom at Annapolis. The lecture on submarine warfare is being given by young Hyman Rickover.
All right, cadets. The head of the torpedo is right here with a little nipple-like thing. Oh, no, don't touch it. Don't touch it unless you know what you're doing. Okay, now what looks like an electric fan out here at the back?
Oh, wow.
That's the motor that makes it swim through the water. You got that?
Sir?
Yeah.
Why doesn't the torpedo sink? It's heavier than water.
Because God is on our side, cadet.
That satisfies me.
All right. Now, during the First World War, all the German torpedoes sunk in the ocean because God was not on their side. That's right.
General D.C. Blame of the Veterans Tap Dance Administration has now already begun his address to the sleeping delegates. This is General Blame.
The pilot was hopelessly clogged, and both our parachutes are still at the cleaners. What's that, I said, pointing to a clearing ahead. My co-pilot, God, replied, that's the Burma oil fields. Well, hell, I said, don't the Japs get fuel from there? Sure, said God, everybody knows that. Well, then, I said, let's drop our bombs on them. Well, God looked at me and said, Colonel, you fool, sir, we can't do that. The British own those oil fields and they're our allies. Well, sir, we had a good laugh over that one. We dropped our load on a herd of cows near Fiji and belly flopped somewhere in the ocean. It was a good landing, but God was killed. And, of course, I survived and floated to shore using his body as ballast. I tell you, that was one of the wildest theaters of war I ever played in. But that's not to say that I've stopped fighting. Just because the war might be over doesn't mean we have to stop. There must be a good cause somewhere, and we can find it if anyone can. We now occupy this great hall, and agitated and confused as we are, it's my flagrant hope, my fervent hope, that we might please stop eating one another long enough to nominate some man Or some anything.
General Blaine.
Let's get down to it.
General Blaine.
And thank you. Not insane.
Mr. Rickover?
Yes, Cadet Carter,
But, sir, didn't German
torpedo sink the Lusitania?
Those were torpedoes made by God-fearing Americans that were sold to the Germans. That's why they worked.
I see.
Okay, now, everybody out to the tank. We're going to have you shot out of submarines so you'll know just how a torpedo feels.
Guys,
okay, let's go, boys.
Wait, just a moment, Cadet Carter. I'd like to talk to you just a moment here. You're different. You seem different from the other men somehow, Carter.
Yes, sir. I'm only 2 days old.
I knew there was something about you.
I was born in a test tube only day before yesterday.
Well, there's nothing like a solid upbringing to give a man character, I always say.
That's what my mother said, too, sir.
That's why I don't understand. I just graded your last test, Cadet, and you got a D. A D. What I want to know, Carter, is why not the best?
Well, sir, I thought that being in submarine class, everything was supposed to be below sea level. But, sir, you said, why not the best?
Yes. Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that, sir. I knew those words would guide me on my slow, mysterious rise to the presidency.
You still haven't answered my question, Carter. Why not the best?
I give up, sir.
Oh, really? Oh, that's too bad. I haven't been able to figure it out myself. I thought you could help me. I mean, the question keeps running through my mind. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I'm so thin and nervous. And,
oh, well, why not the best?
But, yeah. Yeah.
That is a tough one.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, sir. I just don't have a clue.
We'll be back with Act 2 of the Jimmy Carter story after this.